How are you, Roko?
I'm a bit chubby. Finey morning, everyone. I'm filling up and about now, but it was a pretty taxing couple of days, to be honest, just from a work point of view. So I'm easing into it today. But you mentioned I was up on the Gold Coast with the Carlton people at their 10-day training camp on the Gold Coast, and they're working pretty hard. I know it's the biggest cliche in footy, but they look in great physical nick, particularly Bryce Gibbs, I've got to say. And a lot of speculation about the aborted trade to Adelaide, and will he be committed to the Blues? And you can only go on what you see, and I've got to say he looks $1 million, and it was a really interesting interview. I think he just, been like 2 months since it had happened, and he hadn't really spoken about it, and I think he felt like there's been a lot of misconceptions, particularly about the influence of his partner Lauren on the reasons for it, and I think he wanted to clear a lot of that up, and I think he did. Interestingly, too, it was hard sort of fitting everything in, to be honest. I tuned out about 2,000 words in total, but aside from the trade issue, I thought he had some really interesting observations on the club and on how they've got it right now, but they didn't necessarily have it right. So, sort of interested in expanding on that a little bit. It's towards the end of that feature story. He talked about, I said to him, there's been a couple of false dawns, I suppose, in your career. And he said that it's only now they sort of feel like everything is right. The structure's right and the people are right and the standards are right. And just a couple of pretty good quotes. He said, it's the real deal now. It's not just about having words on a wall anymore. Everything's got meaning and substance behind it. What we say we're held accountable to, whereas in the past you could probably get away with it. And he said it'd probably be fair to say along the way our leaders weren't living those standards high enough either. So we've had a really good look at ourselves. And he put his own hand up there. I didn't even have to ask him. He said, I was coming back only 2 or 3 seasons ago, a bit overweight in terms of skin folds, thinking I was in good condition, but just having the people there who are prepared to say, no, that's not good enough, that's when you really start making some substantial gains. And I think he feels that they're doing that. So, I came away from it feeling, if you've got any question about whether he's really committed to Carlton, I think this answers it. And the thing is, we spoke about this just before, but it's a professional workplace now. I mean, yes, it's a football club and it's football, but in a sense, it's no different to a worker who, I guess, gets an offer from somewhere else or ponders a move and it doesn't happen. You just put your head down and do your job properly again. And I think he is a very professional person. So he looked in ripping nick. He really did. Remember, too, that for a guy who's been an assistant, like this is his 11th year now, 2 of his last 3 years have been his best in league footy, where they've really finally got the returns they thought they'd get when they drafted him.
He's worked into the footballer that was picked at number one.
Mm.
He's a very consistent, high-class league footballer.
Yeah, he is.
Every team would have him.
Yeah.
I think they mucked around with him early on in his career. He was trying to be taught lessons of tagging and defensive play, as though there was something in the number one draft pick that was NQR.
Yeah.
And I think being given really the right to play the football that he was drafted for. I remember watching footage of him as a 17-year-old playing brilliantly for Glenelg in a final or a lead-up game to a final, and he did so as a midfielder whose aim was to get the ball and to be an offensive weapon. They wasted many years, I think, Carlton, in trying to add to that side of his game, add to his armoury, a defensive side of the game that he naturally would do as a competitive footballer anyhow. I think it was wasted time.
Well, you can outsmart yourself, I think, as a footy club when you know. Look, it's been done successfully too. I think Mick Malthouse did manage to do that with, remember when Leon Davis, had that great year coming out of defence and More recently, Alex Fasolo, I think they did that with him.
And Paul Lecuria, he worked very hard on his game.
That those years in a run-with role, and then when he gets thrown some more licence, they respond.
But they're not a Bryce Gibbs. They're not a talented number one pick who should be treated... He should be played for what he was picked for.
Mm. And I think it's a fine line between adding to someone's game and the danger of inhibiting their natural flair, I think.
Remember, he was getting taught lessons by star players.
And yeah, yeah.
Basically getting beaten in defensive roles by more experienced footballers, and I don't think he needed to go through that.
No, and I think the corner's definitely been turned. I mean, he won the BNF, didn't he, in 2014. He was fourth last year, last season. Last year, 2015, he had injuries, so it's hard to sort of read too much into that. But I think you're going to see a pretty good year from him, I think.
I use a term, and I don't know whether it comes across as complimentary, but to me it's a term that I reserve for very few footballers, but footballers that are highly valued, and that is he's bomb-proof. He's become a bomb-proof footballer. He goes out there, he gets between 25 and 30 touches, sometimes more. When he's within goal-kicking distance, he's a real danger, and he's one-on-one a very good footballer. Now, because Carlton have not been a finals-threatening team in recent years, we know they made it in sort of a couple of occasions, but they're not really a team that has a lot of games that require heroics at the end for famous victories.
Mm.
He's probably, that's not his trademark, and maybe a criticism. I don't think it's fair because I don't think they're in that position. So he's not one of those last quarter champions necessarily who lifts Carlton to great results. But as far as four consistent quarters now for the last two or three years, bomb-proof, and that's what every coach wants.
I think both he and Mark Murphy have sort of suffered through, pretty superficial perceptions of them. Yeah, have a look at them. They're both quiet characters. They're not necessarily outgoing. They don't present an aggressive, confronting demeanour, do they? And I think often people look at that and they go, they're not hard enough.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily the case. And I think
with Murphy, though, he's been limited. I think he's a desperate, brave footballer, limited by his size.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. But, I mean, even in an off-field sense, anyone who's met Mark Murphy knows what a lovely guy he is, but he's not that Luke Hodge, I'm going to, you look at me the wrong way and I'm going to take you on sort of thing.
Yep.
And I think that's probably been unjustly perceived by people as being soft, and it's not necessarily the case.
He's got a figurative and literal back problem, Mark Murphy. I mean, he literally has been plagued by back injuries, and he's also figuratively carried that team on his back and been required to do too much work. But now with Cripps at the club, Gibbs that bomb-proof midfielder, and you can run young players through there for, hopefully, that they improve, hopefully for support. Mark Murphy should be able to enjoy with I think he's got a full pre-season at his fingertips. He should really re-emerge as a very good player.
I think the key, you just touched on it there, I think the key will be getting enough depth and enough guys that can go through and share the load. And, with Murphy out last year, I think Gibbs and Cripps probably by the end of the year were struggling a bit under the workload.
The two Adelaide boys helped.
Kerridge and Wright.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually Gibbs mentioned Wright particularly as someone who'll play a lot more midfield time. I think Jed Lamb probably will. I think Liam Sumner might be another one. He did mention Lamb.
Sure it wasn't for lunch. That would be a surprise if Jed Lamb stepped into their midfield. Anyhow, if he's looking the goods.
On what basis?
That he's been a not hard-working half-forward flanker at three clubs.
But you're right. But, I mean, those half-forward flanker types, you can't get away with that now. You have to be able to.
I'm saying, so maybe he's been asked to, Step up or step off.
Oh, well.
It would be that case.
It'd have to be.
They've got the Kurnow. They've got good boys there.
Yeah.
He would need to step up. Sumner, good player, more off the half back line, but they need to replace Tui.
Mm.
That's a bit of a loss. But, you know, Carlton, I'm so pleased for Carlton and for the fans, but mainly for Patrick Cripps, that it looks like he'll be right for the start of the year.
Yeah.
Carlton and every team, but particularly a Carlton in development, he's their best player, need their stars, just morally, you know, just for the feel of the club. If you say he's going to miss the first third of the season, this place would have been flat as a pancake, but it's much better that he's making a rapid recovery. That's good news.
And he was up there too. I mean, he's obviously not doing any work at the moment, but he was certainly there and sort of helping in the drills and whatever. He's got some good young key position talent too that we really haven't seen, you know, and how they're very excited about Harry Mackay. I know that.
Like, yeah, well, he's... I got told something about Harry Mackay. I mean, he barely played last year.
Yeah.
But he did step out in the VFL. They, not Preston, not Northern Bulldogs or Carlton, one of their opponents, they rated him. They said, this kid is something else.
Jeez,
they
big.
They said, boy, oh boy. You know what the assessment was? If the draft happened again, he could go number one.
Really?
Yeah, that's. I mean, that was just from a VFL.
Yeah,
somebody I know.
Well,
in the
young
VFL.
Young key position talents at a premium, isn't it? I mean,
number one in the draft. That's a big call, but
yeah.
Apparently he's something. So, every club, what a year we've got in prospect.
Oh,
well, every club's cock a hoop.
I've said it a few times now, but you know, there's only one club I'm prepared to say cannot
Brisbane.
Play finals. Brisbane. Yeah. Everyone else, I think there's
Carlton's
a plausible case.
Well, when we come back from the break, I'll tell you four teams that can't make it.
Okay.
9429 1116, if you've got four teams that can't make it, that's all I can do is put a line through four. Off the SMS, did you see the Aboriginal lad? That's Petrescu
Seaton. Yeah. Yeah, he was out there. I mean, you know, again, you're watching training, they're doing drills and whatever. It's hard to read too much into them. But again, yeah, he looks really exciting and people are certainly talking him up as being a regular senior player. So
are they going to make footy cards bigger this year? There are so many players with hyphenated long names.
That's true, isn't it? We're at an all-time high, I think.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on. I'm waiting for the first triple barrel name.
Is there such a thing?
Well, if Petrescu Seaton marries a feminist, then she will want...
yeah.
So it could be Petrescu Seaton McCambly
Greer.
Smith. Greer. Yeah, Michelle Grattan. A break, and when we come back, a couple of calls. And yours as well, 9429 1116. I'm going to say the four teams can't make the eight this year. Have you got four? Have you got any number? Tell us who can't make it beyond the obvious, Brisbane. Great to be doing radio with the sun shining and with Rowan Connolly. Of course, great mate of mine. Footyology was a great experience for us this year on TV. And we do plenty of radio together. But I think still, for all his great work, radio and TV, he's industry's best with, I was going to say pen in hand, but nobody does work like that anymore. I mean, he's a great writer. You're a great writer, and that's a great article today.
Well, that's very gratifying, Fonny. Thank you.
I mean, it's hard to sort of assess, are you good on radio? Am I good on radio? It's on the eye of the beholder. But I think print is more quantifiable.
Well, I've done it longer.
But also, it's more, you know, there's the article.
Yeah.
You know, here's how I write, here's how he writes. It's more permanent. At least it gets to the fish and chips. Radio doesn't even get to the stage of being used as a rapper.
Actually, without getting too indulgent, which I have been a lot lately with the JB Award coming to its conclusion, but it's not just about writing. When you're interviewing someone, it's about the skill of interviewing, which is sort of hard to get your head around when you're reading the finished article in print. But I think, yeah, I mean, to be able to build a rapport with someone and just sort of put someone at ease, I think... And I felt that with Gibbs. I felt like he felt relaxed enough, like, I'm not going to get stitched up here. And I'd like to think I'm not a person who stitches people up and that I don't judge harshly and I'm prepared to sort of, you know, listen to what they have to say. And in that case, the writing itself becomes easier because you've got their words there. It's just basically connecting them with some, you know, some sort of narrative. So... Yeah, no, I really enjoyed doing the interview. It was a really good experience.
Let's go to our callers. Paul's in Moorabbin. Good morning, Paul.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. How are you going?
It's good, Paul.
Just just before I get to my question to Warren, Mark, I think if when KB hangs up his microphone after 409 years, you'd be a perfect replacement because you're fantastic at what you do as well.
Thanks, Paul. Well, it's great being second in line to KB. I follow a list of eminently forgotten, hard-to-name Richmond second rovers who waited for their chance to get on the ball. I love doing his slot, but I ain't no KB, and I'm very proud to be part of the station. I just forgot to play 403 games, be on the Rules Committee, be on the All-Australian Committee, and be probably the most influential and long-term influential figure in football. So,
and Paul, while we're doing the mutual appreciation thing, I should point out that Finey, in the ratings released last week, Finey went up at a rapid rate of knots. So it's quality show, the evening show with Finey, and I think that was pretty much proof of how people see it as well. So everyone loves each other today.
Yeah.
I didn't say you would be KB. I just said you'd be a perfect replacement, Mark. Anyway, Rowan, up in Carlton Clubland, there's a very big suggestion going around now that actually Carlton approached Bryce if he'd be happy to move back. I'm wondering if you could put any light onto that, if that's true or not.
Well, not from what I can ascertain. I mean, as he explained it, because when Adelaide were the ones that sort of blew the whistle on the plan, and that surprised him, and it certainly surprised Carlton. And then people said, well, Carlton's been blindsided here. He said that he sat down with his manager, Nigel Carmody, and Stephen Trigg, Andy McKay, and Stephen Silvani, I think it was 1 to 2 weeks before the trade period started, to tell them he wanted to go home, and that he'd been discussing it with his partner for at least 12 months. So he said to me that Carlton were shocked when he told them, and they were, I think his words were, they were, you know, happy to try and work for him, but they weren't going to go out of their way to do so. So the deal was going to have to be right. Now, that doesn't seem to equate with them trying to approach him. And I can't think of any good reason why they would want to facilitate, you know, why they would want to be the instigator of that. Can you?
As everyone knows, there's many, many indifferent and lies that goes into football. And then maybe that when it did hit the press, they were just trying to cover it up. Well, not cover it up, but, fix it up for themselves for both parties.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they have. I think we're in an environment now where people are more understanding of why trades happen, you know, particularly when the club does instigate it, that there's not that many players that aren't tradable commodities. But I think we're more accepting now of lifestyle factors being a motivation for guys wanting to be traded. And, you know, the fact is he and Lauren have got an 18-month-old baby, and both their families are in Adelaide, and there's no immediate support network around them. And everyone who's had an infant knows that it's tough going, but and a lot tougher when you haven't got that support. So,
and a lot easier when you're on a half of $700,000 a year. Now, honestly, they have got to get over it, footballers and their partners. In a perfect world, ABCD.
Which is?
Great wage, in your home state, family support, uninjured and playing great footy. You know what? You get two or three of those, and the rest of society would absolutely cut off limbs, except how to be a footballer without them. I mean, they've made a rod for their own back clubs, and the problem is that every club has indulged players because they are the recipients of players coming the other way. So it's impossible for example, who's a club that's got a player that's come back home? Any club that's had somebody play for them for the come home factor and taken advantage of that scenario.
Mm.
So let's say Collingwood, who've picked up a couple of GWS players who wanted to come back to Victoria.
Yeah.
Well, they cannot then, when a player puts the same scenario to them about going back to WA, say no.
Yeah, no, that's a good
Which
point.
They basically did with John O'Marsh, and he left anyhow.
Yeah.
So now all the clubs, give it the 5 years we've had of this pandering, and every club, which means we've now got a highway and byway of coddled footballers. I don't like it as a fan. I think it's crazy. Let's go to Peter in Preston. Hello, Peter.
Hey, good morning, boys. How you doing?
Very good, thanks.
Firstly, Gibbs, you know, he would never ever look at Adelaide again, mate, because they went and seduced him. We want you, Bryce, and they left him out to dry, so he'd be a fool to even consider going there. And secondly,
hang on, how did they leave him out to dry?
Well, mate, they wanted him. They said, we're going to get you here, and then in the end of the day, they wouldn't do the deal.
Carlton, oh, Carlton were ridiculous. Do you know what Carlton wanted?
Yeah, they wanted their first pick. From 2 years.
Their first pick, and then they named four players. One of the Crouchers, Sloan. They were just being silly about it. It was like, I don't know if it was these players, but it was. I think they were more Victorian type players. But it was like Sloan, a Crouch, and the equivalent of a Walker and. Who else have they got? They wanted four of their best players and their first pick, I think, for 2 years.
Yeah.
In other words, Carlton didn't want to deal with them. Didn't want to deal with them.
I don't think it was that cynical myself.
Yeah, I do. And I think they had every right to, Carlton. Bryce Gibbs had negotiated hard for a long-term one-club deal.
Mm.
You know, there's... a big investment when you give a players are now getting 5 years, 7 years, et cetera, et cetera. You know, Isaac Heaney, what's the deal he's penned?
What's five?
You know what I love about that deal? It still doesn't see him out to the end of Buddy's contract.
Yeah.
It's great. Peter, thanks for the call. Hang on to the line. We've got for you a beautiful boneless leg ham from Batochi and a $50 voucher to New York Minute Burgers. Rocco, four teams that can't make it. Have you got four? Because I said four.
No, I
got four.
Well, it depends how you quantify can't make it.
All right. Will not make the eight. Oh, they wanted McGovern.
Yeah.
Or Charlie Cameron. Who
are
key players for them.
Okay, if you said to me, I want to be careful here, I'm not completely contradicting what I've said, because I think there's 17 teams who can argue a case for making the eight. If you said to me, who won't make the eight right now, I'd say Brisbane.
I made a big blue with Jono Marsh. Collingwood were happy to do a deal for him. Freo and West Coast didn't have a spot for him. So apologies to Collingwood, I got that one wrong. But the sentiment is still the same. It was only an example. I'm just saying that if Collingwood got back Treloar and get Will Hoskin-Elliott and who's the other GWS? Adams.
Yeah.
You know, if they get these players because they want to come back to Melbourne, then if a player says, I want to go somewhere else, I'm not saying Collingwood don't do it, and I shouldn't have used Jono Marsh, but the example was you now can't say no after copping the yeses on the other way. Brisbane, are we putting a line through?
Brisbane, yeah. If you said, now this is contradicting in a way what I said, because I think Carlton can make it, but if you asked me to pick my eight now, I wouldn't have them in it.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't have, I still wouldn't have Gold Coast, although I think they can. And North Melbourne are interesting. I don't think they'll slide to nearly the extent that others do, but I think they'll find it hard to maintain their spot in the eight.
I think North are also prepared this year to not be... See, remember, they were going for a grand final spot in recent years. So to just stumble into seventh or eighth is not what they're about. I think North are internally preparing for a season where they want to see their, not first-year players, but third and fourth-year players up close.
Mm.
And unless things fall into place, and let's face it, they started with 9 wins last year, couldn't fall into place better. I believe that North Melbourne will be less invested in desperately making the eight than, say, a St Kilda or a Melbourne, or teams outside the eight would love to make it, where North are conducting...
They'll be more sanguine about not making it.
Yeah, because you can't be going for a premiership and, you know, all of a sudden be as desperate as teams outside the eight for that position, which means that selection, I think we'll see by the end of the year, North Melbourne, if they're not in an A1 position, giving players an opportunity to strut their stuff. I expect Magic Door to play most of the
season. Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is...
Through thick or thin.
Hence the motivation of sort of forcing the retirements of those four players. They're expediting the longer-term goal, I suppose. Look, I think of all the teams outside contending, I do think your Saints are as well qualified as anyone. I think they tick all the boxes. I think they, you know, they immediately... If I look at St Kilda last season, where were they most dodgy? I would have thought defence. How's that improved? Carlisle comes back and Nathan Brown comes in. I think the midfield depth gets bolstered with Kobe Stevens and Jack Steele. I think the attack looked pretty good anyway. I think they've got a good coach who's elicited gradual improvement every year. I think, again, tick all the boxes. So they, you know, in order of contenders... I'd probably have them number one. You agree with that? You're a Saints man.
Well, it's I don't. Yeah, I do. I believe that they're very well placed and they've got good depth around the ground. A lot depends on certain players standing up.
Mm.
Be great to see St Kilda have a spearhead. McCartan could be that man, and he's important. But they can work around that because they've got Bruce Mambry and Rewalt can play forward.
I think you're better off having that than having one. You know, sort of in the pod now. Yeah. You've got to have those sort of multiple taller forward goal kickers.
My four teams that can't make it, Brisbane cannot make it.
Yeah.
I don't think Carlton can. No, I'm saying Carlton cannot make it.
Mm.
Not yet. For mine, Port Adelaide cannot make it.
That's an interesting one.
I believe they're a team in rapid decline.
Really?
Yeah. I know Paddy Ryder comes into the side. He hasn't played for a while. And I think their midfield is overrated. They tried to hive off Hartlett. That was unsuccessful. I don't like the way Port Adelaide have been tracking.
Yeah, the acid's on them.
And I don't believe Richmond can make it.
Oh, that'll be controversial. Why not?
Because Richmond have been fighting a battle amongst themselves over the last few years. Are we good or are we not? You know, that year where they did a North Melbourne and went nothing and then came storming home to answer a question, and that is, which was the true year? Was it the second half or the first half? And they went with the second half, and I think they've just been loyal to too many players for too long that are not... There's too many in their players in their side that just would not make any other finals team.
I'll just play devil's advocate there, though. Yes, they came flying home and were horrible for half a year, but the two seasons either side of that, they won 15 games, which is in many years a top four spot. So if you're looking...
With maximum output from their big name players, well, now where are they? Deledio's not at the club anymore. Mm. I know they've got Prestia and Caddy, but... Dustin Martin's still excellent. Cochran really is not the player he was, even though he picked up the Brownlow this year. It's funny, isn't it?
Move on.
Rance is still a great player, and Rewalt has been recast as, I don't know, can they get him back as a goal kicker?
I reckon they can. Well, it's interesting, the story today in The Age by Sam McClure, actually, about Martin being used more as a shock trooper type forward, which, you know, Prestia and Caddy coming into the midfield allows them to do. It's going to be... you know, the one thing I think with Richmond, I think they've got to take the shackles off. I look at Richmond and I see a side that's too inhibited by, you know, this is the way we want to play and we want to be a possession side. And
that's the other thing. For 5-6 years now, they've been playing a keepings off style game of football that worked brilliantly once against Frio at Subiaco.
Yeah.
How do they... That's going to be a big modification to change them into what now is that Bulldogs kamikaze style, which teams are trying to employ.
Best footy they played was in 2013. They were a far more attacking and free-flowing side. I still maintain this. That elimination final loss to Carlton, they overcorrected and they outsmarted themselves. And the best game, what was the best game they played last year? It was a win over the Swans at the MCG.
Yep.
The last quarter of that game, if I was Damien Hardwick, they threw caution to the winds.
That's right, they went down the middle, they had a crack.
And they kicked seven, I think. If I was Hardwick, I would show them the last quarter of that Sydney game and say, this is how we're going to play all year. Yep. What have they got to lose?
Off the SMS, come on, Mark. Rance, Rewalt, Martin, Cochran, Prestia, Caddy would make any side. That's a big call on Caddy. He didn't make Geelong's team every... Didn't he play a couple of games in the VFL at one stage, though, Caddy? But regardless of that, you need more than five or six players making every side. Quickly, let's find out four teams... from David Wallen that he doesn't think will make the eight under any circumstances. Morning, Dave.
Morning, boys. There you go.
Good, Dave.
While you're patting each other on the back there, Rowan, I've got to love the way you handle the trolls on Twitter. That's pretty good effort you do. You don't muck around with them.
No, well, they don't deserve any tolerance. I'm a no-tolerance Twitter user, Dave.
Yeah, that's right. I've seen that plenty of times. Hey, just I'm the other way. I don't reckon you can pick four teams to go either way because of what we've seen over the last 3 years. Port Adelaide, everyone said they were a dead-in-the-water fish for the next 5 years, and they went with the kick of a grand final. And Fremantle were going to win the premiership last year, and they were dead in the water by round six. So a couple of injuries here. Look, I look at Hawthorn. If Hawthorn lost Hodge and, another ruckman, they'd be struggling really bad. If Geelong lose...
No, Dave, you're right. Naming teams that are certain to make the eight is a treacherous task. But naming teams that can't make the eight out of 18 teams, I think, is more doable. So do you think there are any teams that cannot possibly make it?
I agree with you with that, Brisbane. But we said that about Port Adelaide 3 years ago. They said that they could not play, they would be lucky to play finals within 5 years, change of coach, change of attitude, anything can happen.
Which is why, Dave, I think if you're doing this exercise, you have to presume everything goes right for a side. And you say, if everything goes right for a side, are they capable of making the eight? And the only side that I'm prepared to say they can't, if everything goes right, is Brisbane. So do you have any in that category?
I probably with you, Blake. Brisbane, if you went, everyone's fully fit for 22 weeks, you'd probably say Brisbane. I'd even say, with the pressure, you're right, with Richmond and Collingwood, if they don't win early, the pressure builds on them within the first 6 weeks, they could be gone and cooked by round eight.
No, you're spot on. They are definitely the two teams whose start to the year will be most important, I'd say.
Yeah, all starts Richmond Carlton. Very quickly, Stephen Chelsea Heights, four that can't make it, have you got four?
No, I'm just curious about if you thought Hawthorn is a possibility of not making the eight and their list turnover the last couple of years, the quality players that they've lost if you go through their spine. So
I think it's definitely a possibility. I don't think it'll happen. I just think they've simply got too many good players. It's not like the entire side revolves around Mitchell and Lewis. It certainly puts the onus on O'Meara to not only be fit but produce his best, and Tom Mitchell. But we've seen that Mitchell, now he's established, is pretty consistent in his output. I think the big X factor with them is Jared Roughead. And, you know, now looking like he might actually be able to play a full season, he's a massive inclusion. So I think if he's there, I couldn't see much argument for them missing the eight.
Thanks all for the call. Off the SMS, you're kidding, fine. Caddy never played for Geelong in the VFL. He played seven games for Geelong in the VFL, five in his first season. His other two were coming back from injury.
Yeah, I would have thought they were coming back from injury, but is that not the case?
No, they were coming back from injury. Yeah, okay. But hang on, superstars, they were four-week injuries. He wasn't out for a year. I'm talking about guys that would make every team in the competition.
Mm.
VFL is VFL, and after 4 weeks, I can name you 50 players that wouldn't play in the VFL.
We still haven't seen his best, Caddy, have we? I think there's a lot of untapped potential there.
Take a break and I'll tell you why he'll be a good player for Richmond. Off the SMS, there's a few examples of teams that would have been no ways and defied logic, and the 2015 Bulldogs came from nowhere very fast.
14th.
There's no question Port Adelaide, their resurgence, because the year before under Primus, for the bulk of that season, they were terrible.
I'll give you the best one. We all forget about it now, but West Coast, wooden spoon to preliminary final.
I mean, but West Coast, I think you always, with the two WA teams, and I'm not doing it with Port Adelaide because I've actually put a line through them, but I've got to admit that if you get some momentum going into state, all of a sudden it becomes impossible to win there when you're away from home.
Well, the asterisk over that performance was that they still had quite a lot of veterans, and but that's where coaching comes into play. They had a brilliant pre-season campaign with their older guys, and from memory, I think Phil Walsh was pretty instrumental in that, and they got career best form out. They turn back the clock, if you will, and got to a preliminary final. Amazing achievement.
The question off the SMS is, Caddy any good or overrated, Craig in Ocean Grove? No, he's good. He's not quick, but he's strong, and he's a ball getter.
Is he a bit one-dimensional?
Well, in as much that the modern player, that they love the idea of no inside-outside nowadays. There's no room in the game. Every player that plays, that gets his hands on the ball, including inside mids, are expected to be able to use it. He doesn't have breakaway speed, but he's got breakaway strength, so he can make of a clearance his own. And there was a game, his only ever best on ground performance for Geelong from a Brownlow perspective happened when Selwood wasn't playing a couple of years ago before Dangerfield was there. He kicked four goals and there were some breakaway goals in that performance.
He could do with a bit more explosiveness, couldn't he?
Well, he doesn't have that, but he's got strength. And the thing is that he had no chance at Geelong because he's a first respondent and his opponents last year every week were Dangerfield and Selwood. And there was no way he could get his hands on the ball and he became a low possession getter and in the end had a very poor final game and in the final series was found out. But at Richmond, they want somebody to get their hands on the ball first and feed it to Cochin and Martin and et al. So he goes from third in line
to the P.
Trying to get crumbs off Dangerfield and Selwood, forget it. So he could be very good for them.
Can I just, I want to address an SMS here, someone saying I'd Olympic gold medalist at fence sitting. I said it's a possibility Hawthorn can miss the eight, but I don't think they will. Well, with all due respect, that's exactly what we're saying. I mean, we're saying that you can argue a case of virtually anyone making it or missing out. I do think it's possible they could miss the eight. I don't think they will. That's not that hard to understand, is it? Also, quickly, I did a year in review piece and I talked about the game of the year, GWS Bulldogs preliminary final. I said that Clay Smith centred the ball right at the end for Tory Dixon.
I know you did. Somebody rang up about it.
Oh, I had 500 tweets about it. So apologies. I did write that in a bit of a hurry and it was corrected online, but yeah, it was Jake Stringer, not Clay Smith. You got calls about that too, did you?
Yeah, but to remind you.
Okay.
Look, we're all working under duress today with the news that Paddy Newton's car was broken into. I mean, who'll forget that day, May the 27th, 2008, when the call went out for her lost handbag? We've just got over that, so.
Please tell me that's not online in one of our major papers.
Yes, yeah, it's a big story. I mean, Paddy's car got broken into. Paddy. Pity. The SMSs are flooding in about Paddy. There's nothing we can do now. Her car was broken into and her personal space invaded. I remember in May of 2008, like many Victorians, just rushing around town looking for a handbag. Rowan, I want to thank you for coming in.
I want to thank you for having me on, Fawn.